Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award winning Niall Boylan Show.
But tonight we're going to speak to somebody about something called rapid transformational therapy. Now, Linda Duffy is a certified hypnotherapist and a former Miss Ireland. And she relocated back to Galway in 2022 to set up a therapy with Linda, and spelt with a Y, by the way, after 11 years in Dubai and Saudi Arabia. She says the therapy helped her recover from an aggressive eating disorder. And she joins me now on the line. Linda, good evening to you.
Hi, Niall. Good evening to you.
Now, let's first of all get back to the former Miss Ireland part, so because that intrigues me as well, because we look back, well, I don't know, maybe I look back at these competitions, you know, the beauty pageants and all those, as something from the distant past, although they still happen, as something from the distant past. And you talk about, you know, your aggressive eating disorder. And I'm wondering, maybe it's me and I'm wrong, and if I am wrong, please tell me, but was there a link between the two?
At the time, no, there wasn't a link between the two, because for me, it really started when I was about 15. Mm-hmm. So I definitely had developed it long before I entered into the Miss Ireland. But equally, look, when you're in that kind of industry, it's obviously based around image and how you look.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's not helpful, probably, for somebody like me or somebody who has those challenges with their body. But for me personally, it already started. So look, if it was the case, if someone said, you know, do you blame that for your eating problems? I would say no. But certainly it didn't make me feel better, put it that way.
I mean, those competitions, when you were in the competition, can you remember the night you won? It must have been a great achievement for you at the time, or you felt it was a great achievement at the time.
Yeah, like I remember the night of winning Miss Ireland. It was quite an unfamiliar world to me, because I'm not naturally somebody who would be into looks and makeup and that kind of thing, which I know makes no sense, because most people say, well, why did you enter it in the first place, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't really know. Maybe it was just because I wanted to, you know.
Did other people push you in? Was it like, mate, oh, go on, auntie, you're gorgeous, go on.
No, it was nothing like that. It was just somebody recommended me. And I did at the time, I remember saying to my then boyfriend, going, oh, like, should I do it? And I was like, what about if I don't win? And then I look like an idiot and all the normal things that you say to yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was like, look, go for it. If you don't enter, how will you ever know? And I was like, yeah, okay, let's do it.
Yeah, if you're not in, you can't win, sort of thing.
Exactly, yeah. And
So you did win.
I did win. And I remember at the time recognizing that I wasn't the tallest and I wasn't the thinnest and I wasn't the prettiest and I wasn't the best dressed. And I remember all those kind of things.
Well, you must have been okay if you won it.
Well, but this is the thing. But I remember going, I think I have enough elements of all of those things to be like a contender.
Right.
And I remember thinking, you know, it's not all about looks and it's not all about like how pretty you are. That it doesn't matter as long as, you know, you have some kind of intelligence and presence about you.
Yeah,
you know?
A bit of a personality. So when you're asked that famous question that you get asked about world peace, what would you do if you win? I'd solve world peace. Yeah. Okay. I suppose that year that you won it, that must have been a bit of a whirlwind for you. Did you get to go a lot of places that you wouldn't normally have got to go to?
Yeah, so look, it obviously opens up doors and, you know, it's fun and exciting at the start, because when it's not the norm, it's obviously, you know, exciting.
Yeah.
Did I get to go anywhere exciting? Well, for me, I guess when I went to Miss World, I can normally go to places like, you know, Mauritius and the Maldives and all that. And the year I went, it was to Nigeria.
Oh, okay.
So that was a little bit
I'm not saying Nigeria is not a nice place, by the way, can we just point out? But I think I'd prefer the Maldives. Yeah.
Exactly. I was thinking I'm going to a nice island, you know, exotic island for the first time. So it didn't happen for me, but it's a 4-week process when you're at Miss World, and it's quite a long time when you're, I suppose really when you're not into that kind of world, it's quite a draining process. But it turns out anyways, 3 weeks into it, they decided to move to London. So for me, it actually worked out well because my family got to come to London, you know?
Okay. Okay. So anyway, you moved off anyway. And after that, you went to Dubai, Saudi Arabia. Yep. So where did you come up with the idea first of therapy for Linda? And obviously it was to do with your own aggressive eating disorder and how you recovered from that, or how you, that obviously this therapy helped you recover from it. So what did that actually involve? Because I know an eating disorder can be a terrible disorder for somebody to have, and so difficult to crack that problem.
And it is super difficult. And that, I think that's one of the things that really kind of made me want to train to be an RTT therapist. Because most people who have an eating disorder, they think they can fix it by willpower, or they think they can fix it by going on diets, or otherwise they think, well, I've had this so long, I just have to accept that I have it, and I'll just have to try my best to deal with it. And I was that person for years, you know?
Yeah.
And it was only really, like, I tried talk therapy before, and it really, for me, it was, I almost felt like I was ticking a box.
Yeah.
I was also telling myself, like, oh, I'm doing something, so at least it shows that, like, I'm trying to help myself. But really, I probably wasn't invested. And it was only really when I was in Saudi and I got to a point where, you know, I think my world is kind of just all came crumbling down, and for various different reasons. And there was that point I was like, right, I just cannot do this anymore. I'm done, you know.
And you were binge, you were kind of binge eating at the time.
Yeah, like I was going from binge eating to restriction, binge eating to restriction, binge, and even like just doing it itself is exhausting.
you weren't purging or anything like that afterwards, or
I was never bulimic. Funnily enough, I used to have a phobia of vomiting, so okay. I think that probably helped the situation.
Yeah, I have a bit of a phobia myself, actually. I haven't vomited in about 20 years, thankfully.
Okay.
But I have a thing about it.
I'll do the doses on you then, and you won't have it anymore.
Yeah. So I know, because it is psychological, because when I see somebody else getting sick, I almost feel like getting sick. So it is like
I was that person as well.
Yeah.
And do you know how it actually fixed for me? It wasn't hypnosis at all. I climbed Kilimanjaro years ago, and my altitude sickness was so bad that I got so sick so often that I think my body is like, fine, you're okay with getting sick now.
You're done with that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So what does the therapy involve when you talk about rapid transformational therapy? It kind of seems like this happens very quickly. It transforms you. Obviously, it does what it says on the tin. But how does it work exactly?
Yeah. So RTT is a therapeutic approach, but it kind of picks the best elements of CBT, hypnosis, NLP, and psychotherapy. But effectively what it does is, anybody who has negative habits, right, or negative beliefs about themselves, they come from somewhere, whether it's trauma, childhood, whatever. Mm-hmm. What RTT does is it regresses you back to find what's at the core of you doing those things, okay? So instead of just talking about, like, you know, how you feel, or maybe giving you solutions to, you know, how can you deal with this better? It's really going to, like, deep diving in. Well, what?
So could,
like,
you fix my insecurity and my paranoia? Does that go back to something that maybe happened in my childhood? And how would I find that out? Because, like, is it always successful? I know you're involved, obviously, in hypnotherapy as well. But through hypnotherapy and rapid transformational therapy, can you figure out what that point was?
You can. Yeah, so obviously it depends on, you know, the individual as well. It's a kind of a two-way process.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do during regression is, like I say, it's going back to childhood memories for most people, unless it's an obvious trauma later in life. But most people have an idea of what caused that. How do we get to that point? We ask them so many questions that it's, by the time we finish asking them so many questions, it's obvious what it is. But for a lot of people, they might think they know what's caused it, right? And sometimes that might be the case. They don't know how to link it to why they're doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the case for me. If someone, like, when my therapist said, you know what's caused it? I said, yeah. And I would have given my life savings on saying that, because I was so convinced. But it was only a small part of it.
Right.
You know, but once I understood, like, what was really, what was causing me to do this.
Can we all fix ourselves? Is there lost causes? I mean, have you ever come across situations where you go, nothing I can do about that?
I, you know what, I kind of maybe have a different approach, or maybe it's not even the right approach. But if I feel like, when I talk to clients now at the initial stages, if I feel like they're not committed, I actually don't work with them, because you really have to be at that point where you're like,
it's like giving up smoking. You have to want to give it up in the first place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And again, I was a smoker and I tried to quit for years and I couldn't.
Stop. Yeah, yeah. Right? I'm looking at the packet here in front of me and I can't wait till the next ad break.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. So you kind of, look, you have to be committed to it. You have to really want to change. If you're not at that point, it's probably not going to work for you. But is it successful? Yeah. The people that I had success with are the people that are committed. They're at that point where they're like, I can't do this anymore. I don't want it in my life. It's impacting everything. Right.
And if I want to give up, or I want to find out what that trauma was that caused insecurity or paranoia, or I want to find out what causes anxiety or a phobia or whatever, is it always successful then if I have the need and the want to give it up, Or does it depend on the person? Are some people just not predisposed to being hypnotized or to being fixed?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some people who, you know, they just don't believe in it. You know, and, you know, as a therapist, it's not my job to convince them. If you don't believe in it, that's fine. You know, it's not going
to
work for you.
I'll go to somebody else. Yeah.
exactly. And you might have success somewhere else, you know, or maybe not. But like I say, it's a mixture of you putting in the work and me putting in the work. Okay. Mm. Does it happen? So for me, for the binge eating, it happened overnight. Okay. And that, I was very, very lucky. It does not happen like that for everybody. My second session I done on my self-esteem, that took me about 2.5 months to get to a point where I was in a much better place. So I've actually seen both sides of it. I've seen the overnight and I've seen that it takes longer.
Was the self-esteem bad? Like, did you feel really bad about yourself?
Yeah. Like, if you had asked anybody, you know, was Linda confident, they would say yes.
Yeah.
And I was. I was
yeah, because she won Miss Ireland, for God's sake. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, not even that. I was just a confident person. But like my kind of negative chatter to myself was really negative in terms of, you know, I'd look at myself and say, look at even the aesthetics. You're not pretty enough. Why would any guy want you? You're like, or why would they stay with you? Okay, I'm not smart enough. It's, you know, why aren't you in a better job? Why don't you have a better title? Why are you not married? With all this kind of like negative. And people wouldn't have seen that because I was a confident person. So it was kind of masked.
And when you looked in the mirror, I mean, what did you see?
Oof, depends on what day it was. But, like if I told you all the stuff that I seen, you'd think I'm mad. But like I used to like my eyelids, right? I wonder if I'm mad when I say this, but this is the reality, right? My eyelids, they're two different sizes. I used to hate that. My lips. My mouth, I feel like it's too small for my face.
Right, okay.
My nose is crooked. My earlobes, one of them is bigger than the other.
So
my hairline is square.
Overconscious of all these little tiny imperfections that affect every single human being on the planet.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then you're looking at your body going, oh, like the shape of me, it's no wonder nobody likes me. It's like, it's no wonder I'm not getting good enough work. And you're like, oh my gosh, like people would love to have your body like.
And by the way, when I say imperfections, I don't mean imperfections because I don't think any of us are perfect. And I don't think there is such thing as perfect. I think we're all different and we're all meant to be different.
We're all perfectly imperfect.
Absolutely. Yeah. But isn't it horrible because, and particularly young girls, I'm going to say, you know, particularly when social media has come along, Instagram has made a huge difference to people's lives in a very negative way, I believe, too. When you see so many of these influencers, mainly female, can I just point out, I'm not having a go at you, girls, but you're your own worst enemies. And, you know, you got a girl and she gets a new outfit, she sticks it on, she takes a picture on Instagram and there's 1,000 comments saying, you look great, hon, that's gorgeous, hon, where'd you get it, hon, pennies, hon, all this kind of stuff. And then one idiot goes, you look ridiculous. And you focus on that one comment and that consumes you. I mean, it's just so much damage to people's body image.
Absolutely. And it comes from, you know, that one comment, regardless who it's from or whether they mean it or they don't mean it.
Yeah.
You're automatically going into, you know, your fear of rejection.
Yeah.
But you're not focusing on the, you know, the 100 people that said you look great.
Yeah.
You know, and then the reality is, you said, like behind social media, we all know it's mostly fake. But yet we still do it. We still look at it and we compare.
Yeah, their life is better than mine. Yeah, look at them. Holidays all the time.
And the one thing I've learned from since I started therapy with Linda is you have no idea what's going on in someone's life. Like not even your family.
And I've said this to somebody recently. We were talking about exactly what this conversation we're having now. And it was a friend of mine. And I said, you know, when you look at Ant and Dec on the television and they're happy and they're smiley on Saturday Night Live and they're great. Did you ever look at Dec or Ant and say to yourself, I wonder what's going on when they go home tonight? Or what's going on in their lives? Yeah. Or have they got a bill to pay that they can't pay? Maybe they have. Maybe they've got a big revenue bill or something, a tax bill. Or maybe they're in financial trouble. Or maybe their wife is leaving them. Or maybe their kids are bold, are not behaving themselves. Or whatever.
Yeah.
But we don't think
of
those.
Or all of those things.
Yeah, because or all of those things. Because all we see is what people present to us.
Exactly. And all we know is what people tell us. And that's the thing. You don't, like my friends, my family knew nothing. They didn't know the extreme of what was going on until they read the article in Sunday Independent. They found out the same day.
How did you feel when that article came out? Did many people contact you and say, oh, so sorry to hear that? Yeah,
loads. Yeah. But more so on from a level of, I spoke to so many people, said that I felt like I was reading myself.
Yeah.
They were like, I genuinely thought that you talking about me. And then there was, and that was obviously related to the eating. But then I got loads of messages from other people not who didn't have eating disorders. They had loads of other problems.
Yeah.
But they resonated with the, you know, the self-esteem. I feel lost in life. I hid this from everybody, and they're resonating with that aspect of it, you know.
And the hypnosis kind of works, and it mentions here in the piece as well that obviously people like Tiger Woods used it to block out distractions, obviously when he's going for that hole-in-one or trying to get that ball on into the hole in the green. Barack Obama used it for his campaign trail. Bruce Willis, I didn't even know he had a stutter, but seemingly used it to stop his stutter. And Kate Middleton used it for, now I've never heard of hypnobirthing, by the way. What is hypnobirthing?
Hypnobirthing is basically just visualising that you're going to have a safe,
painless.
Normal. Exactly.
So what? Like you don't use any gas or injections or anything. You just have it naturally. It depends
what you choose. But again, it's just visualizing on healthy baby, healthy delivery, all that kind of positive experiences.
Yes, I wouldn't like to be in that position if it didn't work for you. I will not feel pain. Oh my God, I'm feeling pain. Anyway, but in relation to hypnotherapy, I suppose the obvious things that we think of with hypnotherapy or rapid transformational therapy would be phobias. I mean, people's fear of flying, people's fear of spiders, I have a fear of open windows, by the way. Isn't that a stupid thing? Yeah, so here's the thing, right? My fear is if I'm sitting down eating dinner, right, and somebody opens a door or a window, I have to stop eating until it's closed again.
Why?
I don't know.
When did it start?
See, and my wife gives out to me all the time because I eat too quickly. I have to eat while my food is hot. Now, I have been known to get up from the table, put it back in the microwave to heat it up a little bit more so I can finish it, right? But I have to eat while it's hot. And I have to eat really quickly.
Yeah.
And so I have to get it all into me while it's hot. I have this thing, and so I eat way too quick. I end up getting winded because of that, because I'm eating way too quick. I get the hiccups and all sorts of things. But the window closing. So the window, when it's open, if it's a cold day, I'll feel a draft. And the draft then maybe is connected to the dinner going cold. Just, I don't know. I'm putting it all in my head and trying to put it together. But I have this thing that I can't eat. And I'll have to go over and close the door. If someone opens, say, a patio door at the back, I have to go over and close it again before I can finish my dinner. It's terrible. Maybe it's something from my childhood. It must be.
Speaking of foods, my first ever client was somebody who had a fear of eating vegetables.
Right.
And I'd never heard of that before.
Well, now, I don't eat many vegetables, but it's not a fear I have. I just don't like the bloody things. Mm. Yeah, particularly
sprouts. But the thing is, everything comes from somewhere. It comes from somewhere.
Yeah, it could be. When I think back, my father... You know, when I was young, because my father was quite conservative, you know, very strict upbringing and all that kind of thing. And we would have to sit around the table. There was no such thing as mobile phones in those days. Television would be turned off. We'd all sit there at 5 o'clock eating our dinner. You'd have to ask to leave the table. So you'd have to say, even if you wanted to go to the bathroom, you'd have to say to my father, please, may I leave the table to go to the bathroom? And he'd say, may I look at your dinner? How much have you got eaten there? And okay. Or if you'd finish your dinner, you'd say, may I leave the table, please? I'm finished. And he'd look at your dinner and he'd go, 3 more spoonfuls. And by the way, I wasn't 4. I was like 12 at that stage or whatever. Yeah. So maybe that's something to do with that. I don't know.
Yeah, but the thing is, right, so when we're born, babies, right, if you think about it, babies aren't born with fear. They're not born with phobias. They're not born with anxiety. They're not born with lack of confidence. You know, they fall over on their ass and they're not thinking, oh my God, if I try it again, everyone's going to laugh at me. Yeah. You know, they just get up and keep going and going and going. So everything that we acquire, whether it's fears, phobias, anxiety, lack of confidence, we form it through experiences in life.
Yeah. And it all comes from somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's say I have a fear of spiders, which I don't, by the way. I love spiders.
Yeah.
But so let's say I have a fear of spiders. How do I get rid of that fear? Do you have to put a spider in my hand or something like that to get rid of that fear? Or do I have to imagine there's a spider in my hand?
No, again, it goes back to, I have to figure out where does that fear come from. So it could have been something like when you're a kid and you had a spider come in and you got frightened and no parent was there to kind of comfort you.
Okay.
Or they might have said, oh, just get over it, like stop being a baby.
And these are the most common fears. Flying is a very common fear too that people have.
Yeah, I had a fear of flying. I'm a bit better now. But again, fear of flying comes from the fear of not being in control.
Oh, okay. All right, so you have no control over the situation. The pilot is the only one who really has the control there.
Yeah, or a lot of the time it's because people can't see the front of the plane. They can't see what's ahead of them. So
of course. Yeah.
Things like think there's loads of different reasons for it. And again, it might be because they had a bad experience when they were younger, or they might have had a parent who was terrified of flying and they passed down that kind of, you know, fear to them, like, oh God, like, don't go on the plane because, you know, the plane crashes and all of this. And then
we're all going to
you
die.
Pick that up and you're like, yeah, exactly.
Depression can, now, here's a controversial one, I suppose, because depression, you know, different doctors have different views in relation to depression, whether it's clinical. In other words, whether, you know, it's something to do with, obviously, the, you know, serotonins and all the different mixture of chemicals in your brain. Whereas other doctors say, no, there's no imbalance, that those balances are always imbalanced. And it's just a psychological thing. So I'm assuming from what you're saying to me that, you know, that RTT or that hypnotherapy can help people, that you believe that it's all in, well, not in the mind. I'm not suggesting, I don't want to dismiss people who are suffering greatly from depression. But certainly that it can be helped.
Absolutely. And going back to what you're saying earlier, like, I actually don't think there's any proven research that has to do with the levels of serotonin in your body.
No. People use that word chemical imbalance. Yeah, people use that chemical imbalance word.
You know, because it's sometimes, you know, people say it because it's an easy thing to say. And I'm somebody who, like, I don't believe that depression, you know, I don't believe that the first thing you should be doing is giving someone medication for depression.
No, okay? I would agree with you.
The answer. You know, the World Health Organization themselves, they classify depression as a social issue. Mm-hmm. People are not connected with people. Look at where we are now, social media, everything's digital. We're not actually physically meeting people as much as we used to. And that's why they feel alienated. That's why they feel different. And when they get into that headspace, they can't relate to people.
So they're only relating to people in text, yes.
Yeah. And they have that, they have that lack of community. And if you go back to tribal times, we had that lack of, we had, you know, we're community based.
Were we a better society 30 years ago when we didn't have social media and we all knocked on each other's doors and said, is Johnny coming out to play?
100%. Even if you look at how you talk to your friends now, like, you have to, like, it's almost like you have to make a real effort to meet them.
Yeah.
Well, before, like, when you're like, like, I don't know what age you are, but like when I was young, I was like,
older than you, I'm sure, Linda.
You know, they called the house phone and go, where are you? We're meeting here. Great. And you go there and it's like you turn up on time because that's your meeting point. You know?
I've explained this to my children who are all their 20s now. And I've explained this idea and to younger people about, you know, when you were meeting a girl even or whatever it was, you meet her at a dance or a disco, as we call them. Mm-hmm. And so you'd want to see her again. So they'd say, why don't you just text her? Well, we didn't have mobile phones. Well, then why didn't you just ring her on the phone? We didn't have landlines. Yeah. So the only way was to write to her or hope you met her in the same place the next time or under Cleary's clock.
I know. Well, I remember that as well. Like, I remember when I was in school and like guys would be like sending you letters.
Yeah.
You know? It was like proper communication, like proper like getting to know someone. And that's the other thing with social media and the world we live in now, it's even like dating.
It's quite disposable, the whole thing, isn't it? Yeah, but it's all very disposable.
Everything's too accessible.
Yeah. It's, I mean, but even you know, for young lads now and for young girls, because I don't want to be sexist about this, but for young lads and young girls, dating is just disposable. I'll meet another one. Ah, he's useless or she's useless. I'll meet another one.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. I'll just swipe left again.
They don't tick enough the boxes. So, do you know what? I'll just go on my phone because I'll find another 100 people and there's probably going to be someone better. But guess what? 9 times out of 10, there isn't anybody better. So that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, in my day, you met somebody and then you'd ask them to dance for a slow set in a nightclub or whatever it was. And you kind of get to know them during that slow set and you might meet them the following week. And it'd be a build up of a few months before you'd actually get the bravery to ask them to go to the pictures or something. You know, in those days. Yeah. But anyway, getting back to this therapy. Do you think it works for most people? Would it, you know, do you think I could eat with the windows open after?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm.
Do you think I give up smoking, Linda?
Absolutely. I'll give you a session on smoking. You can test me on it.
Okay. Well, I might take you up on your word.
But you have to want to give up smoking.
Like, you know, I do want to. I did actually give it up going back about 6 years ago. I gave it up for
how long?
2.5 years.
And what happened?
My marriage broke down at the time. And and I got separated and I'm now divorced and remarried. And very happy, by the way. But during that difficult time, you know, when the marriage broke down, I went to a really bad place. And I just found the smoking was a crutch. Stupidly.
Yeah, that's how I started smoking. I went through a breakup and that I never smoked and that was my stress relief. And then I was like, oh, it's just going to get me through this time. And I developed into a 10-year habit.
But I don't have that same stress now. I've never been happier when it comes to my relationship, for example. My wife, I have the most amazing supportive wife. And I'm not in that situation anymore. Now, don't get me wrong, I still have the usual stresses of work and everything else. Mm. But so I don't
because
need
it. You've formed habit, Niall.
I know.
That you need it. It's a habit.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. But I keep saying to people, like I say to everybody the same thing, I could give it up tomorrow. I just say that to people. I don't believe it. But I do say it to people all the time.
Of course you do, yeah.
And my wife, I feel really bad because my wife gave up smoking. She gave it up 12 years ago. And she gave it up the day she found that she was pregnant with her last child. And she's never smoked since. So she literally found out that she was pregnant and said, well, that's it, no more smoking for me. Yeah. And gave it up.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It was the same with me. Sometimes that's how powerful the mind is. I tried to give up for years. And then one year I was like, I was on my way back to Dubai. I was stopping in Paris for a layover. I had two cigarettes left. And I said, right, smoking these two before I get on the flight to Dubai. That's it. And then the next day, done. Didn't even think about them, didn't crave them, nothing.
Yes, yeah, I've done that thing. You know the thing. I've done that thing where you go and you have six left in a pack and you go, that's it. I'm not even going to smoke them. In the bin with them.
Yeah.
Throw them away. And then I'm 20 yards down the road and I'm going to the shop and buy another packet.
are you going back into the bin to try and find them?
Absolutely. Well, look, if people are looking for a bit of help, Linda, and they want to contact you, what's the best way to contact you?
So www.lyndaduffy.ie and it's LYNDA.
LYNDAduffy.ie. And you can get all the information from the website, or if you want to contact Linda through that, you can. I'm sure there's a contact there, an email address or whatever it is that you can contact her. Linda, it's been a lovely conversation. Thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure to speak to you.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic.